all that anger and that aggression is right there. You know, he's a clear example of it, and he can laugh and he can joke and he can, you know, fraud the world. And it's disheartening to sit back and watch how many people are content with that.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Dee Watkins, editor at large for Salon. His new book, We Speak for Ourselves, A Word from Forgotten Black America. Dee Watkins is a professor at the University of Baltimore, founder of the Be More Writers Project. That does it for our broadcast. I'll be speaking Saturday night at 6 o'clock. We'll be doing a showing of 4 days in Western Sahara, Africa's last colony, at University of California, Berkeley. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Has immediate opening for a full-time digital fellowship here in New York City. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock. Coming up next, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show covers politics, history, and the state of the zeitgeist, and they take your calls.
Thank you so much for supporting KBOO during our recent spring membership drive.
Thank you.
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 We're really appreciative for all that you do to support your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Thanks.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Gathering of the Guilds, Friday, April 26th through 28th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. The Gathering of the Guilds showcases the talents of 5 Oregon artisan guilds: the Creative Metal Arts Guild, Oregon Glass Guild, Guild of Oregon Woodworkers, Portland Bead Society, and Portland Hand Weavers Guild. More than 150 artisans working in metals, glass, wood, beads, and fibers will be exhibiting their artistic creations, doing demonstrations, offering youth activities, and more during this 3-day artisan show. Again, that's the Gathering of the Guilds, Friday, April 26th through 28th at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Zenith Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Thursday, May 2nd at 6:30 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church in Portland. This is the 4th community forum about Zenith Energy's ongoing expansion of their Portland Tar Sands Oil facility. The panel will discuss how this facility's operations can harm people, urban wildlife, rivers, and air quality, as well as background on the terminal site, climate justice impacts, ideas for public action, and more. Again, that's the Zenith Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Thursday, May 2nd from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church, 2710 Northeast 14th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey, yes, I'm clearing my voice in case you didn't understand. Hey, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
You had ample opportunity to do that before they
turned
the mics
on. I didn't want to have it inauthentic, you know. I wanted to have all the dirt out
all
there.
All the bodily processes.
Yeah, well, no, not all. Not all. Not by any means. Anyway, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187.
The Mueller report dropped.
It dropped. Yeah,
they tried
to have it slide, but it definitely dropped.
It dropped, yeah.
Yeah.
It dropped. A bunch of it was blacked out.
A lot of
redacted,
it was blacked
as
out.
The
redacted.
Term.
Redacted.
Yeah, quite a bit of it was. We're going to get into exactly, well, we don't know exactly what was redacted, but we can tell you.
Can't because it was redacted.
Right. See how that works?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be able to tell you from what sections large redacted pieces are missing and why.
Yes.
So we're going to get into that. And I'm going to make what I think is a pretty good attempt to cut right through all the BS surrounding this.
And I'm going to support you in that effort.
All right. Hey, thanks.
I'll be helpful.
All right. Here's what
not hindering.
Here's what your big takeaway, your big conclusion from the Mueller report. Ready?
Okay. Yeah, okay, go for it.
Sweeping aside all the minutiae, the president betrayed his country, and he has spent 2 years trying to cover up that fact.
Yeah, and I think they call that treason.
I think they do. and really, in an honorable world, he should...
honorable world?
Well, I mean, that's the standard against which we hold this stuff up, right? Knowing full well that we don't live in an honorable world.
Okay.
All right. But if he had an ounce of integrity, he would resign and then be tried for his crimes. And I say crimes because that conclusion is, in my opinion, inescapable.
Well, he can't resign because right now the position of people is that you can't charge a sitting president. So if he resigns, he'd go to jail.
Yeah, he'd go to jail. So, of course, he's not going to resign.
No.
But he could. And the odds are quite good. Absent something like a presidential pardon from his successor, that when he leaves office, he may immediately find himself facing criminal charges.
Yeah, they'll probably make a deal, though.
Yeah.
I have a very dark view of things.
Yeah. So there's a couple things. I don't want you to lose sight of that large takeaway.
Right.
The president betrayed his country and has spent the ensuing 2 years attempting to cover that up and avoid the consequences
of his
misdeeds.
And I will call that treason.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I think they'll go. Now, we can argue, and we have on this program, and there's a larger argument going on out there, about how much that betrayal, how much that treason really means in real terms. Did the Russians actually steal the election? What exactly was the scope and the scope of their effect on the electoral process? Did it really matter in the end? My answer is there was a non-trivial effect on the outcome of the last election.
I agree with that.
It really matters in the end because, damn it, somebody running for president of the United States should not accept the help of a hostile foreign power to win.
But America's mayor said it was okay.
Yeah, I don't care.
You don't think
he's ever been my mayor? What a stupid title. We look back at all the stupid honorary political titles bestowed over the last several decades. America's mayor might be the dumbest. But well, that's a topic for
another. Yeah, another topic.
Yeah. So, yes, it does matter. It does matter that he colluded with a foreign power. All the evidence in the Mueller report points at obstruction of justice on a number of counts. The report goes into detail on 10 specific incidents. Now, what the other side has been crowing about, what Bob Barr came out in...
Bob Barr is a hack.
Bill Barr.
He's a filthy hack.
He is a hack, yeah. What he's been crowing about is, well, hey, the report did not conclude that the president obstructed justice. That is technically true, and here's why. Mueller approached this investigation looking through a very specific lens. He is a very by-the-book kind of guy, a very orthodox investigator, a very rigorous investigator, somebody who you really want in charge of an investigation like this, I think. But he's also very much... a creature of the Justice Department. He spent most of his career, most of his professional life working there, and he approached this investigation through a relatively narrow scope. And that lens from which he approached this was really about the separation of powers as delineated in the Constitution and how much authority he, as a member of the executive branch, well, not really even as someone hired by the executive branch to carry out this independent investigation, what he was actually able to conclude and recommend. And he interpreted that pretty narrowly. And I think he did so. That was correct in accordance with the statute that governs the independent counsel. Now, a quick aside on that. You remember when we last had an independent prosecutor or special prosecutor? Do you remember?
No.
Guy named Kenneth Starr.
Kenneth Starr.
He led the investigation into Bill Clinton.
Clinton of the stained dress.
It was a partisan farce, and led to a massive abuse of Congress's power of impeachment.
And it trivialized impeachment.
I'm glad you said that, because that specter looms over everything we're going to talk about today. So let's put a pin in that and put it aside. So after the debacle of the Starr investigation, the publication of the Starr report, which is about as salacious a document as you're ever going to read in official circles, Congress let the special prosecutor statute lapse, and in its place we now have the laws that govern the appointment of a special counsel. The special counsel does not have nearly the latitude or the discretion that was afforded the special prosecutor. Congress, in my opinion, overreacted in that. They rightly pulled back from allowing somebody that much power, as Ken Starr was able to wield. They rightfully stepped back from that, but in my opinion, overreacted and left a guy like Mueller with really not enough discretion and not enough latitude to, A, pursue the investigation if it widened outside of his official scope, and second, to actually reach conclusions about crimes committed by the president.
No, I think you're right. And I think that one of the things that characterizes this time in history is the overreaction phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those cases. I wanted to say this before you go any further. There is no doubt in my mind, and it shouldn't be any doubt in anybody's mind, that this man, the president, so-called president of the United States, is ignorant, probably stupid, certainly racist, certainly runs a mafia-like organization, has always in his career done that, is very badly thought of in the New York building trades and so on, rips off people all the time, is authentically a bad man.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And absolutely unfit for his office.
Oh,
the impeachment clause of the Constitution was invented for guys like President Trump.
Yes.
All right. It is absolutely appropriate to pursue that remedy. And we're going to get in a little bit more into that in a little bit. But first, yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about this report, because it's important that people understand what it concluded, what it didn't conclude, and why.
Yeah.
But please don't lose picture. Don't lose sight of the big picture conclusion I offered at the beginning, which was the president betrayed his country and has spent the ensuing 2 years covering that up, trying to hide evidence and doing his very best to derail the investigation into his crimes.
Well, the main crime that is obvious within the document is his effort to derail the investigation.
Yes, indeed. So, as I mentioned, what the Republicans have been crowing about is that the report does not say the president obstructed justice, and that is true. But what the report does is it walks right up to that brink and looks over and says, hey, Congress, the next step is up to you. The report, the Mueller report, is a roadmap to impeaching the president.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about that.
I think that's quite clear.
In no uncertain terms. And I'm not going to go into the weeds on each of those 10 incidences that the report brings up. But it all concludes that the president is guilty of obstruction.
I think there is one important point in the context of what you're saying. If it hadn't been for patriotic people who were Republicans and Trump appointees, mm-hmm. he would have been more, pardon me, more obviously involved in a cover-up.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they stopped him from doing really illegal stuff.
Yeah, right? It's really kind of staggering. So the next question is, what is to be done? It's clear that the Republicans...
You know, Lenin said that.
Yeah.
Okay. I just don't want to forget that.
It's clear that the Republicans in Congress are not interested in exercising any sort of oversight authority.
No, in fact, they are traitors.
I would say, yeah. If aiding and abetting treason is treason itself, then yes.
Yeah, no, it's they're so anxious to help the rich and to hurt the poor,
yep.
that they've gone out of their minds.
Yep.
That's being kind. Yeah.
All right, so the question now becomes, what do we do? The Republicans are not going to do anything. The Democrats control one part of one of the three branches of the federal government.
Right.
So what are they going to do? And do they have really any effective power to do anything? The answer to that last question is yes, they do have the power to do something rather effective. And that is enacting the impeachment process as delineated in the Constitution of the United States.
Right, and while I'm a little bit annoyed at Nancy Pelosi's hesitancy, I think it is wise to marshal the evidence and to have it all ready to go before mm-hmm. the impeachment begins.
Yeah.
This is a timing question.
Yeah, and it is a timing question, yes. And it's also a political question. And the Pelosi and her deputy, Steny Hoyer, have taken a lot of heat for dodging the impeachment question on what appears to be shaky political grounds. And I think they deserve every bit of that heat. In fact, Hoyer came out and said to CNN, no, we're not going to do it right now. There's an election in 18 months, and we're going to let the people decide, weigh in on the president. Well, I think with that sort of attitude, Mr. Hoyer ought to be worried about the electorate weighing in on his future as well, because that's about as cowardly and as mealy-mouthed an answer that I've ever heard on this question for this very reason. The president has manifestly committed crimes. He has betrayed his government. He has abused the emoluments clause from the very beginning. He is using the presidency to personally enrich himself and his family. No one is looking into that last one.
That's true.
By the way. So the question is, should we or should we not impeach? The answer is absolutely we should impeach. The Constitution says we should, and it's a matter of duty. It's a matter of due diligence. It's a matter of obligation at this point. The only question remains, in my mind, is how do you do it? And that is, in its essence, a political question. And I think you can do it in a way that inflicts maximum damage, not only on this fascist president, but on the party that is absolutely sublimated and humbled itself before him. There's a chance to shred these guys and purge them from the, and I'm sounding like a wild-eyed radical now, but yes, these people are dangerous to the integrity, such as it is, of our republic, and they need to go, and impeachment is a way to do it.
I agree. I am more cynical about the nature of the republic and the nature of power relations, but it is obvious that this guy exceeds all reason in his aggrandizement of his own interests.
Yeah. Now, there's a pretty pervasive public opinion, conventional wisdom out there, that nothing that the president can do or nothing that the opposition could say is ever going to change the minds of Trump supporters. I think that is false.
I hope that's false.
I think there is a core piece of that support that is never going to be shaken from him.
Well, they are patriarchists.
Indeed.
They are racists.
Yep.
And they are, in general, gun-toting crazies.
Indeed. And I'm my sense is that this is probably about 20% of the electorate.
Maybe that much.
Maybe that much. There's probably another chunk that's about that same size that I think can be peeled away with if presented with evidence in a certain way in a certain time frame.
Well, the irony that I see is that the schooling that we have given the American people creates a fictitious United States with a fictitious history. And the result is that people have a fictitious belief about things. And that and that fictitiousness extends well beyond the history of the United States into the world of physics, into the world of everything real. And it's very serious and very disastrous. And this is the most classic case of what happens when you don't have accurate information.
Oh, it's absolutely true. So you have this immovable piece of Trump's base that it's going to support him come hell or high water. But there's another part of that base that I think can either be peeled away to vote for the other side or can be sufficiently discouraged so that they stay home from the ballot box, which is fine. From where I'm sitting, that's fine. If impeachment proceedings go through and it becomes undeniably clear to everybody that this president is a criminal, whether or not he is removed from office by the Senate, and we're going to talk a little more about that in a minute, whether or not that happens, I think there's people who will throw up their hands and say, I can't bring myself to vote for a Bernie Sanders, say, but I'm not going to vote. And that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of people also are arguing that impeachment's a bad idea because the Senate is not going to remove Trump from office. If those of you who aren't familiar with the process, it happens in both houses of Congress. Articles of impeachment have to be introduced in the House of Representatives. House of Representatives then lays out their case for the impeachment of the president. Those articles of impeachment are then voted upon. Those that pass the House get those articles that are passed by the House get handed over to the Senate. The Senate then holds a trial to determine whether the president should be removed from office. Now, I think it's true that the Senate, as it's now constituted, is not going to remove the president from office. And a lot of people are saying, well, that's reason enough not to go forward with impeachment. I say wrong. It's absolutely incumbent that we go through the process, even if the Senate leaves him in office, for this very reason. We have, in the highest office in the land, a serial criminal and liar. And if no action is taken on the part of Congress to check him in terms of impeachment, then that means that future generations will look back and say, this kind of behavior is acceptable, and I can do this and face no consequences.
You know, it's turning the United States, it really does. It turns the United States into a mafia state.
Yeah.
And when you have a mafia guy running things, and not a very bright one at that, with a bold hypothesis about his own power and his own reasonableness and his own intelligence, and he becomes ever increasingly crazy. It really is weird that people who are serious conservatives would continue to support him. You know, I don't agree with conservatism in general, but man, this is not a conservative. This is a crook.
Oh, it's true. It's true. But there's also the fact that the party, the Republican Party, is his now. It is his now. The people, the Republicans in the House and in the Senate, who have lined up behind him again and again, do so not because they necessarily agree with him, but because they're scared of him. And he has made clear that anybody who from his party who offers opposition to him, he will endorse opponents in the primary, and that person will lose his or her seat in Congress or in the Senate.
That's true.
That is the power that he now wields over the party. Any vestige of principled conservatism, personally, that I think went extinct when Reagan took office, any vestige of that now has been sublimated to this fear of the president and the wreckage that he can inflict on his party if anybody crosses him.
Well, it was, you know, you could see the process when he was running, and he was arrogant, and he actually said, I don't care what the outcome is, I know I will win because that's me.
Yeah, I could go shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue. And my people would still vote for me, he said.
And people thought, oh, how funny.
Yeah. So the question I want to put to our listeners today is, should this man be impeached or not?
And why or why not?
Yeah. So with that in mind, let's go to the phones.
Okay, 231-8187, Juan.
Juan, good morning.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Well, without a doubt, he should be impeached. I don't think there's any question. Here's the problem. Remember when the Dems took Congress back when George W. was president, and the first thing that Nancy Pelosi said was, impeachment
is
off
the table. Yep.
Remember that?
I do.
So, you know, without a doubt, he should have been impeached. They didn't need the Mueller report to impeach him, okay? He had all sorts of things. He has diplomats in his Washington, D.C. hotel that he profits from while he's the president, the emoluments clause, you know, from the moment he took office. They've had what they've needed to impeach the man from the time he took the oath.
Agreed.
And he's only added to that probably on pretty much a daily basis. So the question is, if they had it, why didn't they do it? And what makes anybody think this Mueller report is going to push a woman leader in the
wait,
House?
Wait. Why did you use that descriptor?
Because I'm gonna come out and say that she is afraid to do that.
You mean because her genitals are different than a man's?
Guys,
what?
All right. I'm not getting it, man.
I'm
a misogynist or whatever you want to call me.
I didn't call you anything. I'm trying to understand your point.
Here's the point. You know what? Let me finish my point instead of jumping on me for something that's totally unrelated. It's not going to happen.
All right, finish up, man.
It's not going to happen. Do you remember when Obama was elected and he said, we don't look backwards, we look forward?
I remember that also.
You remember?
Uh-huh.
This is who you are counting on to do the right thing. And after he said that, look who's running the CIA now. The woman who was torturing people. All right? And look, it's not my fault she was a woman too. After I said it, now every time I mentioned the fact,
you never should have gone there. We never should have gone there.
Having been challenged with your initial assumption, you persist in it. I don't know.
All right, we've lost one. All right. I don't understand what Nancy Pelosi's gender has to do with her political paralysis.
Unfortunately, I don't think it has anything to do with it.
No. Okay, before we go to the next caller, though, I think I know politically what her calculations are. All right, so Nancy Pelosi was a witness to the impeachment of Bill Clinton, right?
Right.
We saw that did not work politically for the Republicans the way they had hoped. She sat and was witness to the damage that they did there. Clinton's approval ratings continue to increase through the remainder of his second term. He was impeached but not removed from office. He will have that baggage following him around the rest of his life. But her conclusion, I think, was impeachment doesn't work. It backfires on the party that tries to do it. And if you leaven that with a healthy dose of Democratic cowardice syndrome, which is all prevalent, as we all know, that's why she's afraid to do it. That's why she was afraid to impeach George W. Bush in the face of his manifest crimes. And I think that's why she's hesitating now. But did it really do that much damage to the Republicans? I think no. They ended up losing a few seats in the House in the midterm election while that was all going on. And in the very next presidential election, they won, or they stole the presidency.
Yeah, let's not forget they stole the presidency.
So did it really do that much damage? No. But what we're seeing now is the fallout from what was the illegitimate use of the impeachment powers of Congress and going after Bill Clinton. This is what I'm talking about when we talk over and over on this show about the corrosive damage done to our norms, our values, and our institutions by conservatives over the years. This is what I'm talking about.
Okay, good. Let's give more people a chance to call us. 231-8187. I think Sean is next online.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
This morning, AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka was being interviewed by the former head of the Carlyle Group. I don't understand why he would even be seen on the same stage as a man like that, but he was asked at the end of the interview, how he felt, and Richard Trumka responded that he's never been more optimistic for the prospects of the labor union movement. And my jaw was just on the floor. And so the point I guess I'm getting to is that when I was a kid, like 8, 9, 10 years old, President Carter deregulated the transportation industry. And all I heard was deregulation from all my family members, because it just devastated the workers in that sector, railroad, airline, you name it.
Yeah.
Then, of course, Ronald Reagan gets elected, and I had classmates whose fathers were air traffic controllers and got fired by Reagan. And so the question I'm getting at is, for the last several decades, I think we've had a very legitimate litmus test that we should all oppose racism, sexism, homophobia, that if anyone comes to us and says, if we abandon those principles, we can have power. And I think that's a very good litmus test. We should have that litmus test. But I don't understand why there isn't also a pro-labor, strong labor litmus test. How could we ever support Carter? How could we ever support Clinton or Obama when we don't have an identical litmus test for strong labor union legislation? And I think that's what brought us to Trump, basically. We had no litmus test for strong union law.
No, I think
I don't think that's what brought us to Trump.
I don't think it was what brought us to Trump, but I think your point about the failure of the Democratic Party to be firmly identifying with and supporting organized labor and working people, I want to make a distinction there, is absolutely correct. I mean, I think it's very sad.
Don't you guys see the abandonment of the labor union movement and the utter devastation that's brought to families?
Oh, absolutely.
I agree, but I also think the labor movement during the McCarthy period just sold out.
Oh,
I have
to
say that.
Did. I don't deny that at all, but my point is what brought us to Trump is the devastation to poor working class families as their quality of life has been devastated, and the Democratic Party has just gone right along with that.
I think you're unfortunately largely correct.
They've been the strongest pushers of free trade agreements. President Obama didn't push card check whatsoever. He ran on it. He said he'd put on his soft shoes and march in the picket lines. He didn't push anything for the labor unions. He pushed more free trade. And that's what brought us Trump. I don't see how you can deny that.
Well, I don't see how it brought us Trump. Let me be clear about this. I think this is a pattern, a long-term pattern. Where the empowerment of the right wing has grown and grown and grown. And I think
economic
that
inequality, it's exploded with the death of the labor union movement. And it's the Democrats who have gone along with that agenda. You can't deny that.
But I don't deny that.
We don't deny that. But remember what I said earlier. The labor movement failed to defend itself as a social democratic movement when it was crucial in the history of the country. It failed to do that. It got very frightened that it would be accused of being left wing or something. And that was a very bad time for labor, and it hurt labor a huge amount when the CIO was at its greatest power. It essentially allowed itself to be harmed by the right wing.
I agree. I definitely agree with you about that. There's no excuse for that behavior during the McCarthy era. I completely agree. But look, they still continued to give millions and millions of dollars to the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party turned around and stabbed them in the back. There's just no denying that.
That's in large part true. I'm not here to argue for the Democratic Party. I think the Democratic Party is what we're left with. That's a little joke. And we are unfortunately going to have to support it, because we don't, you know, we have a burgeoning social democratic movement within the younger and newer members of Congress, but it ain't there yet. So we're stuck with it. So we have to work with it.
Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah. Who's next? Sean. Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning. I just have a question, and that is, if the president had taken Trump had taken information from a friendly foreign power, say Saudi Arabia, Israel, United Kingdom, instead of what you call a hostile foreign power, would have that made it okay?
No. No.
Actually not, but it wouldn't be, let me say this. No, it would not have been okay. But the fact of the matter is that Russia has consistently tried to weaken, if not destroy, the power of the United States as a government, not as a capitalist system.
Well, and tried to disrupt the post-war liberal consensus.
Right.
Okay. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, but I'm not going to argue that point one way or the other. I'm just curious as to... you've referred to him as a traitor and some other things, and I'm no fan of Mr. Trump, but I'm just curious as to, I think a lot of countries have an interest in who wins our elections, and I'm just curious whether it's okay to take information from what you would call friendly foreign powers.
I don't think in any event is ever okay. It's not a question of information. It's a question of manipulation and utilization of that information to create a false consensus politically. And what the Russians did with their trolling was actually, once you know that it's the case, and Trump certainly did, it was actually traitorous.
To answer your question unequivocally, I don't think it is ever okay for a candidate for president of the United States to accept the assistance of a foreign power, whether benign or hostile, to affect the outcome of an American
election. And I pretty much agree with that.
Okay.
Do you think any other foreign powers have attempted to intervene in our elections?
I don't know.
We don't know the answer to that, but I don't think it's ever been done on a scale like what the Russians did.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering my question.
Okay.
All right, Oliver, you are next. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I'm grumpy.
Well, cool. Yeah. Well, let me... I don't agree with a lot of you guys have to say. You know
okay.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But let me start by saying that... from what I'm reading with the Mueller report is it looks like a wash. And there's no mention of CrowdStrike. There's no mention of Fusion GPS. There's no mention of Bruce Ohr, top dog at FBI, and Nellie Ohr, CIA operative, with Fusion GPS.
I believe all those things were outside the scope of Mueller's prerogative.
They should certainly be in there, sir. We can't disagree on that.
Well, whether or not should is beside the point. It's what was there.
He was actually limited to a very specific task.
Well, listen, I'm reading Volume 2, the obstruction volume. I think that's what it is, if I'm reading that correct. And it lists a whole bunch of mainstream media as references. So we went from 12 intelligent agencies that are supposed to know all things like God. And now Mueller is listing in the summary BuzzFeed, Washington Post. Bezos has been in bed with CIA for a long time. Listing all of these mainstream media lunacy in a DOJ Mueller report, special counsel report. That is absolute silly nonsense. Now, with that,
wait a minute. Why do you think that? I don't quite understand what you're saying. You don't think the reportage is in and of itself significant?
I think that it is a wash. I think they're washing what's really going on. We don't have time to get into my deep state theories that this was U.S.
state,
intelligence.
Yes.
Yeah. This was U.S. intelligence that were, this is what I'm referring to. Bruce Ohr was FBI. So this is Stroke, McCabe, all of these guys who are now going to be put on the spotlight and make an average carpetbagger like Donnie look like a hero. Now, this is what I want to say before you cut me off. Let me chime on this last thought. Is you guys that are hacking and hounding on this Russiagate lunacy are propping up a 2020 guaranteed second term for Donnie. You got to back off on this because it's got too much nonsense to give it any merit. So I'm telling you right now, not only do you have your own Democrat Party allies, operatives, that are going to block any real impeachment, but you guys are setting up the dawn for a victory lap. Because once this comes out in the wash, Barr's now going to turn on the Clinton and the Obama operatives, which you guys are going to... you're going to crawl under your desk because it's going to be scary for you. That what really happened hasn't come out. And the Mueller report is a wash. It's totally washing what happened, which means Mueller is in on it. Flynn's working with the... You've got the Mossad involved. That came out in this report.
I'm actually going to stop this because where you're going is a deep state conspiracy. And I think that is just not tenable. You don't need that argument, first of all. Second of all, it's mostly stuff that has been created by various right-wing paranoid organizations, including, interestingly, Fox News. This isn't what's happened. This really very simple. The Republican Party didn't have the courage to put forward their kind of unexciting candidate. They had this flashbang guy with his TV persona who dominated with rudeness and was allowed to take over the whole contest for the presidency, for the Republican Party candidacy for the president, and who then proceeded to use a whole bunch of his flashbang techniques with a lot of promises that played largely to patriarchy, to racism, to the downtrodden elements of the working class right wing, and it isn't really that mysterious, but it is a revealing of the weaknesses in many ways of the kind of politics that have evolved since the Cold War. But you know, I'm willing to let all that go because the basic question has to be, is this guy guilty of crimes? And the answer is, Donald Trump is a criminal, part of a mafia family, literally, mafia family, who does not deserve to be and should not be president of the United States and should not have any kind of power at all. He's a bad guy.
I don't think they're literally a mafia family, but I think they behave a lot like one.
I actually think, and this is my deep state theory, that there's a lot of connections here. I know New York pretty well, and I know the construction trade pretty well, and yeah, there's some really interesting aspects.
And it's important here also to step back and put this all in context. What originally led Trump and the Trump campaign into contact with Vladimir Putin and essentially, by extension, the Russian intelligence apparatus? That was the dangling of a big prize in front of Donald Trump, which was the prospect of constructing a Trump Tower in Moscow.
Exactly.
This was going to offer him profits estimated to be in the $300 million range. In other words, this was going to be the biggest score of his long and corrupt career.
True. Right?
We also know that at some point along the line, it's highly likely that Putin obtained compromising information about Trump.
Oh, you mean the P-tape?
That's what I'm talking about. And we also know that for whatever reason, maybe a combination of this compromising material, maybe a function of Trump's personality that Putin has skillfully exploited, and that is Trump's affection for strong men.
Right.
And powerful guys and dictators, which we've seen again and again and again.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, Trump became embroiled with these guys. They strung him along with the prospect of a $300 million Trump Tower in Moscow. Trump decided he would run for president. He really didn't expect to win. But then along came this offer of support in the midst of the election, which Trump and his team decided to accept. Now, what Mueller was unable to do was establish a smoking gun of complicity, of conspiracy between the campaign and the Russians. But there is enough smoke and enough fire for Congress to now take up this mantle and arrive at that conclusion.
I agree. And I think that one of the most interesting things about the report, the Mueller report, is that in every instance of really gross effort by Trump, he was blocked by responsible conservatives who said, no, no, you can't do that. Let's not do that. I won't do that. I'm not going to do that. And at one point, he's saying to people, don't take notes. You know, Roy Cohen, biggest crook lawyer ever, didn't take notes. Where's my Roy Cohen?
Right. Now, there's another piece of this that we should not forget about. And that is during the 2016 campaign, when the American Investigative Services, the FBI and others, had this evidence that the Russians were actively trying to help Trump win the election. They went to leaders in Congress, the Speaker of the House, the Senate Majority Leader, who was, of course, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky.
The turtle.
Right. Obama administration said, we've got this information. We're coming with you to talk about what we do with it, because this is going to go off like a bomb in the middle of a presidential election. McConnell said to Obama, if you come forward with this, we will weaponize this and we will use it against you publicly. We will accuse you of trying to game the election in favor of Hillary Clinton. Consequently, this information was sat on during the rest of the election, and it played out, of course, the way it played out. Let's go back to the phones. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. There's a couple of things I'm concerned about, one of which is, I think, it's probably at the core of Nancy Pelosi's reluctance to move ahead with impeachment, is that she can only lose 13 votes and pass anything. And I think she's very worried about dividing the party in the House. You know, for one thing, if she loses 13 votes on an impeachment motion, that would split the party horribly and make it damn near impossible to win the election in 2020. And I think that's at the core of her concern. But the other concern has to be the weakness of the evidence against the president.
I don't think the evidence is weak. That's the one thing I don't agree with in what you've said.
Well, I think the evidence is not compelling enough to put the Republicans in the Senate, who would have to vote on whether or not to remove.
Removal is not going to happen under any circumstances. The best that we can hope for is that the House impeaches
him. No, it's not going to happen.
Right. And I think it's still a worthwhile endeavor.
Whether or not we can convince some Republicans that the president has stepped over a line that's unacceptable to the American people. I mean, the question for the trial in the Senate is really whether or not we can convince enough voters who are in the states where Republicans now hold seats in the Senate to throw those senators out. Because we need to take the Senate back in order to accomplish anything, to deal with climate or other kind of justice issues, anything of it that's important to the American people, health care. We've got to take the Senate back. And the critical question there is whether or not a trial in the Senate is going to help win those seats back or not.
You're right. That is an important consideration.
No, yeah. I think there are two things that have to be considered. There's a moral question. Do we allow this and make it normative in American politics henceforth? And that, I think, is the major question, whether or not the guy gets impeached. And by the way, there's another path that can be always taken, which is censure, which happened and really broke the back of McCarthyism way back.
But there's more than 13 seats in the House that were Trump seats, Trump districts, mm-hmm. back in 2016, that are now represented by Democrats.
Right.
And it's those Democratic votes that Nancy Pelosi is concerned about.
Yeah, I'm sure.
If she loses them on an impeachment vote, that will destroy the party and her leadership.
That's entirely possible. But I also think that this is a time to show a little backbone here. This is, you know, electoral considerations are always there. We're talking about politicians.
If you can't pass an impeachment in the House, there is no backbone.
I don't know if that's right or wrong. I think it's really important to do the right thing. And this is a situation where you've got a criminal in the White House who is incompetent as well as being a criminal. And the right thing is to create a situation where he's disempowered. And whether it's disempowerment through censure or disempowerment through impeachment, it's got to be done. If you don't do it, you ain't got nothing.
No, I agree. I agree that the investigation has to continue. And what Nadler is doing to get the evidence, to get the subpoenas enforced, is essential. It's not a question of backing off. And Pelosi is not asking any of her chairpersons to back off. She's encouraging them to go forward with the investigation.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
And if more evidence comes out that really can be convincing in a trial in the Senate, I think then the case can be made for an impeachment. But I don't think we're there yet.
You know, I actually agree with you, and that was something I was going to get into towards the end of the show here. So, yeah, by and large, I think you're right. But I also, the one thing Pelosi is really good at is keeping her caucus in line and making sure she's able to marshal the vote she needs. So I don't know how big of a concern that actually is for her. You know, but by and large, I think you're correct. And I think we're going to give some others a chance. Thank you very much.
The civil authorities have issued a child abduction emergency for all of Oregon beginning at 8:37 a.m. and ending at 9:37 a.m. Amber Alert originating in Spokane, Washington at 5 a.m. today. Estranged husband broke into residence, stabbed the wife and took the child, then left the residence in an unknown direction in a rig. 2014 sued for legacy sedan Washington license APN. 2,450. The suspect is Justin P. Robertson, 42 years of age, white male, 5 feet 9 inches tall, 205 pounds, green eyes and a goatee beard. He was last seen wearing a green Adidas t-shirt and black Adidas shorts. The victim is Ethan O. Robertson, 6 years of age, white male, weighing 30 pounds with brown hair and brown eyes. He was last seen wearing blue pajamas and an orange Nike t-shirt. The suspect has access to weapons, but it is unknown if he has any in his possession. Please contact the Spokane, Washington Amber Alert tip line at 509-456-2233 or call 911. This has been an activation of the Oregon Emergency Alert System.
Part of 45 minutes saying that the right thing to do is impeach this guy. And that is absolutely true. But the caller is right when he says that we can create conditions more favorable to a successful impeachment process in the House and B, a subsequent trial in the Senate that will support future electoral objectives of liberals and progressives in the United States. Most notably, as the caller said, regaining the Senate, which is of paramount importance. Also, as the caller said, if we want to enact any sort of meaningful legislation and take any sort of meaningful steps towards addressing problems like climate change and income inequality and healthcare and on and on and on. So here's why I think this is a good idea. Impeachment proceedings are immediately going to eat up all the air in the room. It creates a circus. It creates this ongoing media narrative. It will, in all likelihood, galvanize that immutable part of Trump's base that we talked about before. It will, of course, send Fox News into an absolute frenzy. It will probably, unfortunately, flip the reactionary switches of many mainstream media outlets. I'm looking at you, CNN, who are afraid to get behind bold actions by progressives, even when they have the force of constitutional rightness behind them. Have you noticed out there, and I'm sure that you have you noticed that nobody ever accuses people on the right of overreaching or people on the right of being too radical? Usually those are criticisms reserved for the left. And I think a headlong rush into impeachment is going to trigger that sort of response. So I think there's a lot of wisdom and continuing to investigate until we reach a sort of critical mass in terms of evidence where impeachment is not only a desirable option, but the only option.
The inevitable option.
The inevitable option. It's very easy at some point to look at a bunch of concurrent and ongoing investigations in the House and say, oh, now this is an impeachment inquiry.
Yeah, you know, look, at some point, you have to do the right thing. And we're at that point now.
Yeah.
And I think that the right thing is to keep amassing the evidence, keep talking about, but not immediately doing impeachment. And then when that critical mass is reached, and I think it's close to being reached, the impeachment process goes forward.
Yeah, I think that's
I originally said, let's wait till 2020 and vote the guy out. I don't even think that that's a reliable thing to do.
No. If I were a betting person, I would say that's probably how we're going to get rid of him. Because I really, when it comes right down to it, don't think the Democratic leadership have the political courage to go forward with impeachment. Unless we can arrive at some sort of critical mass like we've been talking about. But separate and apart from the issue of impeachment, there's an overwhelming number of reasons to investigate this president with the full power of the House of Representatives.
No, I agree.
Why? Because exercising oversight is how we are going to halt and hopefully even reverse the damage that this guy has done to our institutions and our norms.
You know, I'm not as positive about the nature of the history and the behaviors of the United States as you are.
Yeah.
I think I would call you a liberal conservative or conservative liberal.
I have no idea what that means.
I don't either. I'll just say it.
Okay.
But I am absolutely convinced that this country is at the edge of a true totalitarian phenomenon. And I think that without a real, strong, and I'm going to use these words because I think it's very important, social democratic movement in this country, we ain't going well.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Oh. Am I still a liberal conservative liberal,
I'm gonna
or whatever
give
the hell
all
you
that
just
up.
Called me?
I'll give okay, all good. That up. I'll apologize all right. And move on.
Now, let's just take a second, because I know we got a caller waiting to come in here, and just talk about the few of the things that we mean when we talk about why this guy should be impeached. He's routinely elevated his self-interest above the responsibilities of his office. He has failed to divest himself from his extensive financial interests. He has failed to disclose any information about those financial interests, including his tax returns. He has allowed a wide range of actors, foreign and domestic, to influence his actions by taking their money. He has funneled cash into his own holdings, most notably Mar-a-Lago, which he calls the Winter White House in Florida. Every time he goes there, he gets paid. he charges the federal government for the hotel rooms that his Secret Service detail stays in.
Really?
Right. I mean, really? This is just, I mean, and we could go on and on and on. He's demanded that public officials put loyalty to him above loyalty to the public. He demanded loyalty from his first FBI director, and when that director was unwilling to make that pledge, fired him.
Right.
He demanded that his attorney general unrecuse himself from overseeing the Mueller affair.
Right.
And we go on and on and on and on. He is called the press the enemy of the people. He's falsely alleged that our electoral system is subject to massive fraud. He has called for the banning of followers of a major world faith from entering the country. He has forcibly separated children from their families at the border. He has erected what can only be called concentration camps along our southern border, where people are being held in horrible conditions, as I mentioned just a minute ago, with children separated for long periods of time with their parents, sometimes with no hope of eventual reunification.
And no trial by jury. None.
And none. Clearly, this guy is unfit for his office. Clearly, this guy should be removed.
Yes.
I think that is beyond question.
The only question we're really discussing is, what's the best strategy to get rid of this creep?
Indeed. All right, let's go back to the phones. Mike, you're next.
All right. Guys, I've only heard this said one time in the last week or so on any media, and the word is paper ballots.
Yes, well, I agree with you. Paper ballots. So simple, so obvious, so right.
Yeah, they've admitted that our machines are hackable. They're broken. There's no way to avoid attack. And they're playing with them. We're standing on the precipice, like you said, Joe. They're about to sweep our democracy right out from under us. And one more thing. What about this crazy Australian? Send him back to Australia. You know what I'm talking about. Rupert.
No. Oh, Rupert.
Rupert Murdoch?
Yeah, but send him back to Australia, sir.
No. While very desirable, he has a right to operate his creepy businesses.
Okay, well, what about, you know, these elections, I don't care. We could have a landslide vote and they could still play with it and mess it up with these computers.
No, I think what you're saying is pretty much correct. I think that, one of the things that maybe even needs a constitutional amendment is the requirement of paper ballots in every state in every election. That's something that could be done, should be done, and in many countries always is done.
Yeah, I know. We are on the precipice here, guys. We're standing on the cliff looking over at the rocks and the ocean. I mean, we are so close to having our democracy swept from under our feet. I don't understand why people aren't totally up in arms. Do we get four more years of this guy? We're not going to have any Social Security. We're not going to have any Medicare. We're not going to have any Medicaid. They're going to find a way to say we can't afford it. We can afford trillions for the military. The only thing bigger than rock and roll or the movies is the military.
Okay, listen, thanks very much for the call, man.
All right, let's go to Natano. Good morning.
Good morning.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, very good.
Okay,
I've got a solution. Well, I got a couple points here, but for starters, as a conspiracy therapist, I think, you know, seeing conspiracies for what they are, it's a little difficult sometimes because we're so involved emotionally. But I wouldn't rule out the fact that this is a damage control operation like we had. I used to be part of the Krysak Institute in the 80s when we did the Iran-Contra thing.
I remember that.
And
yep.
Yeah. So we were all hoping that, you know, someone like Mueller would ride in on a white, shiny horse and deliver the goods and have the bomb drop on this crime family.
You never see a shiny horse, let me just say that.
See, I think he very much delivered the goods. I think Mueller did deliver the goods. But go ahead.
So anyway, I wouldn't, you know, you totally discounted the guy that said it could be a damage control operation, and I don't think we should count it out yet, because it's hard to tell what's going on in the deep state, but it's not impossible that this is not a damage control operation where they're just trying to preserve the executive. Doesn't matter who's in there. But the other point I wanted to make is I didn't vote for Hillary because this corporate, you know, right-leaning TPP embracing side of the Democratic Conservative Party is not what people want. And I think if we want to get a real victory, we have to be proud of being forward thinkers and you know, not succumbing to the safe center.
Okay.
Because the center is not safe anymore.
Okay, I agree with you. And
thanks for the call.
I think we need to go to next. I think we have one more caller.
Right. Corey, you're on the air. Make it quick.
Yeah, real quick. I don't really blame Trump. I think Trump is just a symptom. I work in higher education, and more I'm looking at students and actually people with PhDs say, like, yeah, Trump's my guy. I think there's something really going on with him, I'm trying not to simplify it, but I think before we can blame Trump, we need to really start looking at the American people and say, what's going on? Why are you so easily, to accept this guy and accept what he's doing is normal? I think there's a real something going on with that democracy where people either don't know, they don't care. Thank you, guys.
Oh, I completely agree.
Thanks
I couldn't agree
call.
More with
but
that.
But I just want to defend the PhDs of this world. I don't know anyone with a PhD who thinks well of Trump.
I bet you could find some.
I bet I could.
Okay. John tweeted at us to say, remember, support for Nixon's impeachment started at around 19%. It is far past the time now for subpoenas and testimonies under oath, letting the support develop. I think that's where
we
ought to go.
I agree with that.
I think Bob Mueller should be subpoenaed and forced to testify.
I think he should be made to testify.
Yeah. I think
it saves him the embarrassment of, and then he has to testify. Yeah.
James Comey. Jim
Absolutely.
Sessions,
yeah.
Don McGahn,
yeah.
All over and over again, and maybe the president himself.
And McGahn is interesting because, you know, he really is one of the people who kept the president from clearly doing the crimes that he tried to do.
Yeah, yeah. That was a lively conversation. I really appreciate everybody's input.
Well, I think it's good. I think it doesn't. We're just starting to poke at it. I think that we have a lot more to talk about, and I don't want us to become a monographic operation here, but boy, this is really a serious matter.
It is, very much so. So thank you for tuning in. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM.
And remember, the best in music as well as the best of public affairs.
It's true. It's so true. That yes. is an unimpeachable statement.
Unimpeachable.
We'll talk to you next week. Near a flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Pete Seeger Tribute and 100th birthday celebration on Friday, May 3rd from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The 6th annual Pete Seeger Tribute is a family-friendly sing-along event that features Lauren Sheehan, Peter Hayes, Ben Davis, Bill Merlin, and many more. Again, that's the Portland Pete Seeger Tribute and 100th birthday celebration on Friday, May 3rd from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein focuses on Earth Day 2019. At 11, stage and studio host Emay Roberts talks about Tenali, the Royal Trickster at Northwest Children's Theater with artistic director Sarah Jane Hardy and actor Ken Yoshikawa and musician Saumini Sengupta. Also on the show is Francisco Garcia, director of Diary of a Worm, Spider and Fly at the Oregon Children's Theater. At 11:30 on Art Focus, Amanda Clem talks with Portland photographer Susan Soibert. And now it's time for Alternative Radio. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 37th Annual Oregon Ceramic Showcase, Friday, April 26th through Sunday, April 28th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Oregon Potters Association's 37th Annual Ceramic Showcase and Sale